Blog Talk Radio.
This is Sasha Adi, host of the PCOS Challenge radio show, designed to help women overcome polycystic ovarian syndrome, a hormonal and reproductive disorder that affects 1 in 10 women of childbearing age. We'll be bringing you the best information on fertility, hirsutism, weight loss, nutrition, mental health, and other conditions surrounding PCOS. The goal of the PCOS Challenge is to inspire and motivate you to make positive changes in your life. So tune in regularly to get insights from leading experts and the support you need. This is Sasha Adi. Help spread the word and take the PCOS Challenge.
Hello everyone, this is Sasha Adi, and thank you for tuning in to the PCOS Challenge radio show. Today our special guest is Glenn Ellis, a health communications educator and a complementary medicine consultant. He's formally trained as an herbalist and a homeopath and has a line of herbal products. He lectures in the U.S. and abroad about complementary and alternative medicine, and is a favorite guest and commentator on radio stations around the country. He also contributes to a weekly web advice column, yourweb.com, and has multiple publications, including his book, Witch Doctor, spelled W-H-I-C-H, Doctor, What You Need to Know to Be Healthy. He is president of Strategies for Wellbeing, LLC, a health education and consulting company based in Pennsylvania, where he consults with national corporate clients on promoting and providing health education for consumers and providers. He is world-renowned and has a very busy schedule, so we're privileged to have him here. Thank you, Glenn. We appreciate you taking your time to speak with us.
Listen, the pleasure is mine, Ms. Adi. Thank you so much for having me on your program.
Oh, yeah, no problem. Thank you.
I really want to also just commend you on having the courage and the fortitude to tackle this issue, which is so under-addressed. And I just really admire that you have the insight to know that this is an area that really, you know, when you talk about 1 out of 10 women, you know, that's 10% of all the women in America are impacted and their lives are affected by this particular condition. And so this is not something that's under the radar screen, but just for you to be bringing this kind of light to it is just really commendable.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Kudos.
So you're an herbalist.
Yes, I am, among other things. I've been called worse, but in many ways, from whence it all kind of like, well, I guess in many ways, you know, professionally, I guess that's one of the foundations of the work I'm involved in, is the training and the experience I had working directly, you know, both from a practitioner's point of view, a retailer's point of view, and certainly as an educator in the world of herbal medicine and herbalism, so to speak, and other things that I'm involved in many, many ways emanated from that.
Okay. Yeah, see, when I told people that I was going to be speaking with you and I mentioned that, you know, you were trained as an herbalist, they asked me a couple of questions to ask you, which I can't, you know, go over on the air.
Uh-oh.
So
that might mean that I'm not the one to ask the question.
So I think I'll ask you a couple of questions of my own.
Please feel free.
So tell the listeners what inspired you to move into alternative medicine.
Well, I guess I would have to say this. Since I probably would, I would say at least as early as the age of 6, I had always been determined to become a doctor when I, quote, unquote, grew up.
Yes.
You know, we all have those dreams.
Oh, yes. I had that same dream.
And for some reason, it never left, and so I really kind of grew up with that, you know, path and was very fortunate to have people around me, both my teachers and educators and other very influential people in my life from within my home as well as outside who supported my ability to dream like that. So it ended up with me being an undergraduate student in a pre-med curriculum at University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. But at some point, I remember distinctively being mentored by a brother who was a he had actually finished med school, so he was several years ahead of me. So he kind of mentored me along the path while I was a freshman coming into undergrad, and he was already in med school. So as I was about to complete my undergraduate education and actually go into medical school, he one day shared with me that he had been taking care of a patient as a resident in the hospital who was on life support. And long story short, for the sake of time, this person died, and he was really upset because, he was instructed by his the chief resident to take this guy off the life support because it was futile and except and a waste of resources and those sorts of things. And so it just struck me for the first time, two major things that I've never shaken for the rest of my, since then, I should say. One was that it made me realize for the first time how much power doctors have over people's lives.
Yes.
You know, we're talking about, determining who lives and who dies, literally. And then secondly, and most importantly, the person who died in this case, the patient, was a 42-year-old man who had had a massive stroke and heart attack. So it resonated to me to say, not that he died like that, but I had to stop and say, what do you do or what happens to a person in only 42 years that could cause them to come to that kind of an end? So it made me stop to look at causalities and diets and lifestyles and environmental kinds of, factors that play a role in our health, all of our health, and what kind of conditions are food grown under and what are our food choices and those kind of things started to really impress me, and it made me gravitate my attention and my desire to want to be a doctor, which at the heart of that desire was just to be able to really help to make a difference in people being able to enjoy the highest quality of life. And so a part of that made me understand that there was a whole school of medicine that was thousands of years old.
Oh, yes.
Which was, herbal medicine. And so I saw that I did my studying and looking into that and realized that it was clearly the United States was one of the few Western or developed, quote-unquote, countries where herbal medicine was not an active part of mainstream medicine. And so that kind of really fueled my fire to answer your question in a roundabout way.
Oh, but that's a great answer.
Okay. Yeah, so that was really it.
Okay, that's a great answer, and I could see why you kind of moved away from Western medicine, so to speak, and, went into something that you could probably control a little bit more.
Yes.
Okay, is there a difference between complementary medicine and alternative medicine, or is it the same thing?
No, they are different.
Okay.
Specifically, when you hear complementary medicine, just by definition, you're talking about something that complements or works along with something else.
Okay.
Now, frequently in the medical world, which is where, ironically, I spent a lot of my time in hospitals and medical schools and institutions of higher learning and those sorts of things, because of the growing trends towards integrating is considered to be complementary and alternative medicine. You see the acronym CAM referred to complementary and alternative medicine.
Okay.
But complementary medicine is purely that, finding ways to complement what is considered conventional or mainstream medicine by the utilization of other types of modalities, whether it's herbalism or herbal medicine, or whether it's homeopathy, or whether it's energy, or any Reiki, or any of the other types of modalities that are under the umbrella. Acupuncture is another. All of these things are under the umbrella of alternative medicine. But what I like to always caution, you know, people, and particularly if I may, you know, do two things so bold as to, A, just to, you know, address, speak to your listeners about
definitely.
This, but also, more importantly, may I call you Sasha?
You definitely may.
Okay, I had to get permission, you know. But thank you. But, Sasha, what's important is people should always understand there is no alternative to proper medical care. You know,
Say it again. I think that is a profound statement.
There is no alternative to proper and appropriate medical care. Now, many people may have difficulty processing that concept because of for whatever reason. I hear constantly people will call or leave me messages or contact me or stop me and say, you know, I need to find some alternative. You know, I need to go. I want to do natural. I got diabetes or I've got this condition or they just diagnosed me with cancer, but I don't want to deal with my doctor. I want to go the natural way. And so my doctor doesn't believe in that. Then you need to find another doctor who will have a different level of respect for your beliefs, including your desire to want to utilize some forms of natural medicine. But you don't ever need to find yourself in a situation where you believe that there's some alternative to receiving medical care for a health-related
yes.
condition. So what I try to do, Sasha, is to really figure out ways and work in areas and try to make the types of efforts to become somewhat of a bridge builder. I like to think that I'm able to take people like the ones I just described and
mm-hmm.
Build a bridge for them to connect with the proper medical care.
Oh,
and it becomes a very mutually beneficial relationship in that regard.
Yeah, I can definitely see that.
Pardon me?
I said I can definitely see how that
yeah.
could be. Yeah. So do you think there's a relationship or could be, or do you know of a relationship between complementary medicine and PCOS? Or?
Well, you know, I would have to say that absolutely there is. But once again, and I go back to, and I really was not trying to give some type of a ceremonial, you know, kudos and shout out to you for what you're doing, because this is a very, very important area. And I really believe, and it's purely speculative, it's not based on some scientific evidence, but I really believe that many of the lifestyle situations that we are all a part of in this current society we live in, I think we're going to see the byproduct of these lifestyles and these exposures and a lot of the things that we are all, you know, subject to every day. In women particularly, we're going to see the increase of that 1 in 10 women. We're going to start
mm-hmm.
to see those numbers rise, where you're going to see 3 out of every 4-5 women and 4 out of every 8, you know, and all.
Yes.
So it's going to continue to climb. So it's important that people understand that this condition is not only in existence, but it's as prevalent as it truly is. We need to understand more and have more educational efforts like the ones you're doing with this challenge to really help women to understand the kinds of symptoms that they take for granted. And in many cases, what I find is a lot of women will think these symptoms belong to something else.
Oh, definitely.
Right.
But, you know, PCOS is heavily misdiagnosed. Or,
yeah.
you know, there are so many symptoms that are in, you know, the umbrella of PCOS. That's why it's called a syndrome, because there are
exactly.
so many symptoms. And, you know, so many people, so many doctors, because this is supposedly so new, so many people don't know how to put them together to call them this complex, if you will.
And let me, you know, if I may elaborate on a point you just brought up because of why they call it a syndrome.
Yes.
Right? So let me just take a second, if I may, and just talk about syndromes.
You may.
And if you understand syndromes, then you can really appreciate why this is such a critically urgent matter that needs to be addressed. When you talk about syndromes, let's go back and look historically, and just in the last 25 years and look at the kind of syndromes that are, you know, we talk about the most common one is what? The AIDS syndrome,
yes,
right?
Yes.
AIDS is an acronym, you know, acquired immune deficiency syndrome, right? The S is for syndrome. And then when we start to look at other kinds of conditions like lupus and like multiple sclerosis and like rheumatoid arthritis and like sarcoidosis and so many other of these kind of conditions, that if for the most part, these are syndromes. Now, I continue to emphasize that word because a syndrome is something that means that they really can't say specifically what is the clear diagnosis for this.
Yes, exactly.
They can't specifically say, okay, this is the diagnosis and this is how you treat it. So instead, in order to address this in a medical and a clinical setting, it has to be put in the category of a syndrome. Now, a syndrome is a condition that is identified by it possessing one or more of several out of a list of syndromes. I mean, out of a list of symptoms.
Symptoms, yes.
So now, for example, in the case of AIDS, and,
yes.
Please don't hold me to these numbers, but I'm almost sure that I think there are there's a list of about, I think it's 36 symptoms. And I think that from the way the math of it works is that I think they'll say something, for example, that if you have 8 or 12 of those symptoms out of the 36, the physician can officially classify you as having AIDS.
AIDS, yeah.
Right? So now just think about this for a second. So we're talking about the possibility of having a whole bunch of symptoms, and just because you've reached the number of symptoms out of that category, you can be considered as being a person who is actually has AIDS. Now, not only is that real tricky in that part of it in terms of being diagnosed, but that now impacts how you're going to live, what quality of life you're going to expose yourself to, what kinds of diets and foods and what kind of restrictions on those things are you going to do, what kind of medical interventions are you going to be open to allowing to be done to you. So once again, this, when we talk about polycystic ovarian syndrome as a syndrome and how we need to understand it, and first by looking at the range of symptoms, that everything from infertility and weight gain and sleep apnea, skin problems, inappropriate hair growth, or excessive hair growth, or any of the number of, and the list goes on, as you well know, pain and all kinds of things. So the list goes on and on when we start to look at those symptoms. So what I always have been able to do my best to convey is to help people to understand you've got to be able to know your body. You got to develop a love affair with your body. So if you have if there's a man in your life, then you have to, whether you're married to him or that's your boyfriend or whether this is, somebody you're just starting to date, whatever the nature of your relationship, always look at the man in your life, and this is my advice to women, always look at the man in your life as somebody you're having an affair with because you're really in love with yourself, right?
That's great, yes.
And I know this sounds a little, I'm really out on the edge, and I think outside of the box, right? But I have to really try to say, how can we do things? How can we understand these things, these critical health issues in ways that are going to allow us to really take them with the level of seriousness that we do, give them the kind of priority that we should, and to then properly make the right decisions about what's in the best interest of our health and our bodies. The only and the most important and the best way to do that is make sure that you don't love nobody more than you love your body.
That's
right?
True.
So yeah, there's this cute guy I'm seeing or whatever, but I've never let him come between me and my body. Right? And so I'm saying that's how we have to kind of, and I try to keep things very real because these are life and death kinds of situations that we're talking about. Well, these are quality of life. These are the things that will impact your ability to enjoy and to be involved in every single aspect of your life. So going back to this whole thing, I say in order to understand these symptoms, you got to know and love and understand your body so that you can understand that if you're constantly fatigued, which is one of the prominent symptoms of polycystic ovarian syndrome,
mm-hmm.
if you single out fatigue as one example of a symptom, most of us, mm-hmm. because we don't know our bodies and we don't understand ourselves properly, the thing we're going to do is say, wow, I need something for some energy. Let me go take something for energy. Instead of stopping and saying, okay, let me look at what I'm doing to my body. Let me look at what I'm feeding my body. Let me see how much rest I'm giving my immune system and all of those things first. And if
yeah.
we do that, then we can address the root cause of it.
Oh, exactly. I definitely agree with you because, well, fatigue can mean lots of things, and it should always be a red flag, no matter what, it should always be a red flag. So, continue.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's just that once we start to look at things like this stuff, then we're able to assess what is going on with us.
Yeah.
We're able to know how, because see, otherwise, we can easily find ourselves chasing symptoms. So you talk about 7 or 8 symptoms that are prominent with polycystic ovarian syndrome, and you'll find yourself taking something, some kind of energy boost or some kind of something to give you more energy. Then
mm-hmm.
you're going to find yourself taking something to help you lose weight because obesity
mm-hmm.
is another symptom. Then you're going to find yourself taking something to try to deal with increasing your sex drive. Then you're going to find yourself taking something to try to make your periods more regular. And so now you're chasing all these symptoms, and you're further polluting and complicating the integrity of your whole metabolism because you're taking all these things. So you just keep making a bad situation worse, and then that's going to manifest another set of symptoms on its own because now you're going to start possibly affecting the liver process, the liver
yeah.
functions, and then you're going to start to see your thyroid start to, become more irregular in terms of its metabolism, which is now going to affect the adrenal glands, so you're going to really become more fatigued.
It's a vicious cycle.
And that's why I just want to go back, and that's why I say you got to say my body and I are madly in love. Right?
I would like you to repeat that. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, and so that's first and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody that you would normally in a relationship be madly in love with, you are super attentive to their needs.
Yeah.
You're out shopping somewhere for you, and you see something and say, oh, wow, I know he would like this. Or you're in the market buying, just picking up something on the run, and you say, you know what, I'm going to get one of these. I'm going to take it home. I'm going to try to make some because I heard he likes this dish. So you're always thinking about the best interest of this other person in your life. And this is how we have to start to really encourage people. And in this case, specifically, we have to encourage women to think about their bodies and themselves in this way, to take care of themselves and always think about in all their decisions. They're always mindful of, how that's going to impact their body.
Yeah, that's a really great point because, as you say, some of us, myself included, I think sometimes I'm too much of a selfless person. I'll think about everybody else before I think about myself. And that's really not the way to go.
Well, Sasha, we are all products of a society that has raised all of us as little boys and little girls.
Mm-hmm.
For the little boys to grow up expecting that's how you are supposed to be. And as a little girl, you're a product of a society that says that's what you should expect you're supposed to be. So
yeah.
Now we have to realize how important it is to shatter those myths, to validate that it's okay and not only okay, it's absolutely proper for you to feel that there's clearly value and significance in you having a consciousness that says, I am important and I matter, and then act accordingly.
Yeah, this is true. Well, thank you. I need to move on to some other questions.
Sure.
Yes, people actually were very interested to ask you questions. There's a one of my listeners, she wanted me to ask you, she has a fatty liver, and she was diagnosed with PCOS, and so she can't take metformin, you know, and some of the other drugs because of, you know, her fatty liver. She wanted to know what sort of alternative medicine or what sort of herbal medicine could she use to improve the quality of her life.
Well, let me answer that question to the best of my ability by first going back and talking about this whole concept of this fatty liver.
Yes.
Now, it's important for the listeners to know, just as we talk about the liver as an organ, the liver is directly or indirectly centrally involved in 500 different functions that go on in the body. It's a chemical plant, it's a filter, it's a storehouse, it's a producer of chemicals, it's immeasurable. It's involved in the digestion of your foods, you know, by helping to produce the bile. Gallbladder. So I'm just saying, it's unbelievable. So now, I say all that to say, the first though, that you can help, we can help visualize for each other just the role and the workload of the liver.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're talking about diets that, for the most part, are tremendously high in fats, and in most cases, the wrong kinds of fats.
Yes.
And just how, what it does, that along with all the other demands that are placed on the liver. So it's easy to see how in this day and age, that a fatty liver is not something that's uncommon.
Yes.
So now to your friend's question, because of that condition, she can't take metformin, which is generally the one of the things that has been shown to be most effective to address some of the, you know, challenges that are faced by women who are suffering with this syndrome. So my suggestion is to, A, go back, always go back to the beginning. And by that I mean, does your friend or listener, does she drink any water of any significance? See, because
okay,
we are first, that's what, see, this goes back to that love affair.
Yes.
And let me tell you, we're going to start a whole revolution here tonight that we're going to see, you know, this is not about women's rights or, you know, or the 18 million cracks in the glass ceiling. This is about, we're going to start, that women will just be madly in love with themselves, because most people don't understand how crucially important it is just a basic, normal, optimal bodily functions to just make sure there's an adequate intake of water.
Oh, yeah.
And among other places in the body, nowhere is this more significant than the liver.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll find, almost without exception, somebody who would ask you that question will almost guarantee not to be a water drinker.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so now, if our bodies are 60, 70, 80%, I mean 70% water, right? And so you got to look at that being a reflection of the role and the importance that significant amount of water plays just in terms of normal body functions. And so keeping in mind, we're talking about the liver. So on an average, the average human being loses between a quart and a quart and a half of water every day just through your normal bodily elimination functions, urination, perspiration, etc. So now, if you're not at the very least replacing that, you're starting to move in towards the states of dehydration. And once we move in that direction, then you start to significantly impact the efficiency of your bodily functions. Nowhere more prominently will that be seen than in the liver.
Liver.
So now you're starting to see how you could very naturally start to obtain the conditions that lead towards a fatty liver. And then the more that, right? Yeah, go on.
No, I was going to ask you, can a fatty liver be reversed?
Absolutely. That happens
okay.
all the time. Absolutely.
Okay.
And that's the beauty of the human body. That's what I'm saying. And, you know, it's like the more you really get into somebody you fall in love with, I know,
mm-hmm.
you, think I'm a little off. Just work with me. But you'll find that the more you do this, the more you'll understand, because you'll see the response. You know, it's like somebody you love, if you really attend to them and you take care of them and you show how much you care and you're concerned about their well-being, and they reciprocate that, and you start to then engender something that they give in return that is like beyond your wildest dreams. And so the more you start to do those basic things of taking care of the body, making sure you got enough fiber in your diet, making sure that you got enough water in your circulating throughout your body and lubricating and hydrating your tissues and joints and ligaments and all of those things, you'll start to see the body respond in a way. And to your point, you'll start to see those conditions that are basically inflammatory in nature. You'll start to see those conditions start to recede and in many cases go back to an optimal state of health.
Okay.
But to completely answer your, you know, the question from your listener, I really am saying all this to say before I would even consider going over and talking about the kind of possible herbal remedies that could be used for that, I say let's make sure that we got the foundation of this whole thing in place before we go into the next level of trying to address it, because there's a wide range of things that have been shown to be extremely effective. Everything from milk thistle, silymarillion, dandelion, which is a remarkable liver tonic. And a lot of people that either are from, down in the southern part of the United States, down south, who or people who are from, many of the islands in the Caribbean, know about dandelion teas and dandelion tonics and spring tonics, because those are other ways that the body, that's a plant that the body can use, and it has been shown to be extremely effective to help to cleanse the liver of toxic buildups and excessive fatty waste and those sorts of things. So before we get into talking about which of those will be the most appropriate one, you got to make sure that you cover those baseline kinds of behaviors that includes water and that the bowels are moving properly and that there's not toxins that are continually circulating through, into the bloodstream because of a buildup from constipation and those kinds of basic kinds of conditions.
Yeah. Well, that's fair enough. I think we all know, well, most of us know what we're supposed to do, but it's just the follow through. A lot of us are just not good with that.
Yeah. And Sasha, what happens in many cases, we have a population here, in particularly in the United States, we have a population of people who are bombarded with messages that totally silence the right message that you hear. Like you just said, we all know what we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
But then we are bombarded by messages that say, don't worry about that. Come on, you can do this. Get some of that.
Mm-hmm.
Do this. Don't worry about that. Listen, Sasha, we're a society of people where we can turn to a channel on cable and watch somebody exercising and then feel like we're and act like we're tired. Like, you know what I mean? Like we just did something.
I know the feeling.
We will watch a food channel and watch the chefs and the talented chefs and the iron, whatever they're called. I forget all the names of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
We got a plethora of all these food shows showing how to fix this and fix that. And then after that, we turn it off and say, wow, I'm hungry. Let me go down to the burger joint and get something to eat.
Yeah.
I'll go get a three-piece and a biscuit, right? And in our mind, we act like we really believe we're healthy because we watch this food show regularly. But our behaviors are something else. So I'm just saying we got to understand the extent to which it requires us to work hard to love our bodies.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like, I do this type of thing enough to know how important it is that we've got to do things and say things and talk about these issues in a way that people will remember and that will be, you know, emblazoned on their brains and in their minds and in their psyche so that it can impact and help to make a difference. So when I tell you we're starting a revolution and people are just going to be thinking about being in love, you know, and because, you know, if you're in love with somebody that your friends don't like, you don't, and if you really love this person and you know they love you, you know, it's like, I don't care what people say, I'm sticking with this guy. Or,
yeah.
You know, I'm thinking, you know what I mean? So when you get develop that kind of relationship, then you can ignore all of these other messages and not be so influenced by them.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that's great. Okay, Glenn, may I ask you another question?
Sure, please.
It's a personal question. This
Come
is,
on.
My hair is falling out.
Yeah.
Literally, my hair is falling out. It's been... I've been, you know, my hair's been falling out for the past 10 years, you know, intermittently. And, okay, I guess now that I know that PCOS could be a factor, you know, because it's hormonal, you
yes.
know, probably increased testosterone. And I stopped putting chemicals in my hair. I haven't put any chemicals in my hair for over a year. But it's still falling out.
Okay, now let me look at it. Let's try to break this down a little bit.
Okay.
Now, what about your nails?
My nails grow too fast for me.
Okay.
You know, my nails are fine; they're not brittle, but my hair is brittle and literally breaks off and falls out.
Okay, and your skin?
My skin is fine. Well, I have dry skin. Well, who doesn't during the winter? But my skin is relatively okay.
Okay.
It's just my hair.
Now, the reason I'm asking this is because the same system, the hair, skin, and nails are basically a part of the same system.
Yes.
So they're basically fed by the same kinds of things. Now, what we also need to point out here when we talk about polycystic ovarian syndrome, we
mm-hmm.
need to really point out that the ovaries, which
mm-hmm.
are the target area for this particular syndrome,
mm-hmm.
the ovaries are a part of a system in the body called the endocrine system,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
Which is it's a network of glands. There are no organs. It's all glands that are a part of this, the thyroid, the adrenals, we talked about them earlier, the pancreas,
mm-hmm.
the ovaries. So all of these things are connected together, and each one of them produces hormones.
Yes.
Now, what happens is there is, because they're all connected in one system, there's a some type of a mutual balance that they provide for each other so that to help to regulate the production of all these hormones. So that if something is, one of them is out of whack, it's like the weakest link in a chain kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So if one of them is out of whack, it's going to impact everybody else. And so that can lead to a disproportionate production or an underproduction of particular hormones by a particular gland. And then you start to see that deficiency manifest in the areas of the body that benefit from those hormones or the chemicals and nutrients that are associated with it. In this case, I would tend to want to start to consider the possibility of the hair being affected by that.
Yes.
So one of the things I look at in a lot of the patients and the clients that I work with over the years in these areas, whether it's a thyroid condition or ovary condition or whether it's an adrenal condition or even insulin as it relates to diabetes,
mm-hmm.
all of those cases you will find the same type of symptom that you just described talking about
mm-hmm.
the hair because they're all part of this endocrine system. So what you want to do is think about looking at more closely the kinds of nutrients that are important for a healthy endocrine system. And really make sure that you're providing that system with all of the nutritional support, because often we just leave these things on up to their own volition to just kind of like heal themselves and correct themselves, which they're capable of doing if
mm-hmm.
they're given the proper nutrition and the proper nourishment. And so one of the things that I look at are the kinds of minerals that are particularly known to be associated with that type of thing. Every, you know, the biotins and the silicas and calcium and, you know, magnesium and chromium. All of those minerals are the ones that we have to look at and say, where am I getting this from in my nutritional input? And that's when we start to say, I am deficient because I can identify, I know what I'm eating and not eating, and I can identify that there's something missing here. So we either try to increase those things in our natural diet, or we look to dietary supplements.
Yes.
That's the appropriate way that you want to start to do those sorts of things. And so those are the kinds of thought processes that I would go through when I even start to broach those kinds of issues.
Okay, well, I started taking supplements, and I just recently started taking supplements regularly.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, hopefully that will kind of balance out whatever is going on.
And like anything else that's nutrition-driven, this doesn't work with the same kind of impact and power and speed that would happen when you take a pharmaceutical prescribed medication, which is formulated to have that type of a powerful impact. So I say all that to encourage people like yourself to be prepared to be patient in the realistic amount of time it would take. Because often I know people who will start to do the right thing, and after 2 weeks they say, my hair's still falling out. I've been taking this stuff every day for 2 weeks, and nothing's happened. So you got to be prepared to make a commitment. When you're talking about herbal medicine particularly, at the very least, you want to be talking about 90 days to really start to even, and not that it'll be corrected, but to see that there's some indication that this has some validity to it so that you can be further encouraged to continue to do it. But nothing short of that is really going to make a difference.
Okay. And now that we touched the topic of supplements, can you expand on the difference between herbal supplements versus vitamins?
Well, once again, we're talking about, in both cases, they're all considered dietary supplements.
Okay.
Now, let's go look at the fundamental core of this. Is we're talking about nutrition, which is what we get from our foods. We eat food. A lot of us think we eat food just because we're hungry or we got cravings, but the real reason is because we eat food to provide our body with specific nutrients, whether they're vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, whatever those nutrients may be. Those are the things we eat food for, so that our bodies can digest and break the food down and extract from it the actual nutrients that our body needs. And they're we hear about these minimum daily requirements. So we know that there are certain things that we need at the very minimum, we need a certain amount of each of the things I just named. So these categories are vitamins and minerals. And then there's another category. We're looking at the herbs. The herbs are actually food. They're regulated as foods. They aren't regulated like medicines. They get the same kind of, you know, regulation and oversight as the food that grows out in the field, because these are plant-based supplements. They're plants. And like any other plant, if you eat an ear of corn or, you know, asparagus, whatever the food is, you're eating it and chewing it and swallowing it, and it's digesting, and there's some specific nutrients in that asparagus that are being extracted from the food as it digests, sent into the bloodstream, and then it feeds the cells and tissues and organs of the body. The same thing if you take an herb, that's what's happening also. There are things inside the herb that will give you what you need to be able to have it be removed from the herb and sent into the body to do the exact same thing. And some things have what is considered not just a nutritional benefit, but they have a medicinal benefit, that they can be like medicines because of what the substance inside that herb will do once it's in the body. It provides something that even has a medicinal type of benefit.
Okay. Let me just say,
when you're talking about the difference between vitamins and herbs,
mm-hmm.
there are herbs that can provide, as I mentioned, they're plant-based, so they can actually be consumed and digested like food. And in some cases, there are herbs that actually can replace food, and specifically there are things like spirulina, which is a complete food. It has all the you can eat, you can live your entire life off of spirulina and water and never starve. But you can't take one-a-day vitamin every day and drink water for your whole life and live, because the vitamin does not contain everything needed to sustain life.
Okay. That's good to know. Where can I get some of the spirulina?
At your favorite local health food store. It's a very commonly available product in most health food stores. And it's a sea product. It's taken from the sea. It's kind of like a seaweed of sorts, or grown in freshwater ponds and lakes and that sort of thing. It's a green product, very rich in protein. There's more protein in spirulina than there is in raw steak. One of the highest sources of iron, B12. It contains everything the human body needs to live. So I use it a lot in my practice with people who are either diabetic, who have to eat frequent meals throughout the day, small and frequent meals. I use it a lot in weight loss programs so that people don't just starve themselves by taking things to cut and curb their appetite, but they're actually feeding their body wholesome and healthy nutrition without all of the other kind of stuck garbage that goes along with all the things we typically eat.
Yeah. Okay. I have two more questions, short questions about vitamins and herbs. So when we go and we pick up a vitamin supplement and we look at the nutrition, the daily value.
Yeah.
And I see 6,000% daily value, daily recommended value.
Yeah.
Is this because, it takes a lot to absorb these minerals and vitamins, or why would they have, such a large daily value percentage?
Excellent point. That's an excellent point you just brought up, that's one of the good reasons is because of because something contains 6,000% of something doesn't mean that after it goes through your entire digestive system and then is made available for the blood to go into the bloodstream, that you'll still have 6,000% up left. And that's an excellent point in the way you identified that, because in many cases, that's what has. The majority of that stuff is lost in the digestive process, never to be heard from again. That's one thing. And the other thing is that there are some things that remember they're saying, just hypothetically, as you mentioned, this nutrient represents 6,000% of the minimum daily requirement.
Yeah.
So either there's a very great degree of difficulty in isolating a small enough quantity so that after it's digested, there'll still be enough left, or it's a water-soluble supplement that will not be absorbed into the tissues of the body, and so whatever you end up not needing, you'll excrete that in your elimination of bodily function.
Okay. Yeah, great. And then when it comes to absorption, are gel caps better than tablets? And what about these vegan gel caps? Can you give us a brief summary about?
Okay. That's most important to address that question is, what are the other fillers that are in the tablet or the capsule? Because many times the fillers will restrict the ability of the actual substance that you're taking to be broken down and assimilated into the bloodstream. So that's the more important concern. And my philosophical approach is that when people say, is it better to take the capsules or the tablets? I heard the capsules or the liquid. Which one gets into the system quicker? Well, we're not doing this for quickness. We're doing this for a long range. These are, once again, as we talked earlier, this is the type of thing that you do on a much longer range on an ongoing basis than you would when you were just taking an ibuprofen to knock out a headache.
Mm-hmm.
These are things that you plan to take. So It's not important whether it gets into your system in 30 minutes versus 45 minutes.
That's a good point.
So what really matters is what is most convenient for you. Some people say, well, I have difficulty swallowing tablets. Capsules go down better. Or some people say, I don't like the taste of the tablets. You know, you got to taste what's in it.
Mm-hmm.
The capsule, you don't. So it's those kind of preferences that really should be more prevalent than trying to determine which is going to get in your system quickest.
Quicker. Okay.
Yeah.
Great. So now let me ask you, can you tell us about your herbal products and expand on it? Because I know that I did look at your website and I saw that you had some products.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about them?
Yeah, well, let me, you know, what I did, you know, and there are five, I have a line of my own formulas, and they're all proprietary formulas that I actually created and perfected over a number of years, over probably a 10-year period, continued to work with those formulas until they reached the point where I felt, first of all, felt confident about their integrity that I would put my name on them, because more important. And at the same time that I saw enough indication from those people who were using them in terms of positive outcomes and feedback that we ended up with those five formulas. And there are only five at this point because those are the areas that I saw as most critical and the things that were most likely to be the ones that people are going to go look for something to deal with. And I identified them as the a cleanse, I call it Glenn's Cleanse, right?
Catchy.
You know, a little cute play on words, right? And this is a formulation of about seven or eight herbs that have, traditionally have been used throughout history to address the internal cleansing process. And people confuse that term. This is not about laxatives or that sort of thing. We're talking about cleansing. And if you could once again just, you know, work with me here and visualize what happens when you take a load of clothes and you just put them in the washing machine and you turn the dial, you know, turn the start button and you just run the cycle. And then you take another scenario and you put those clothes in the washer and you add detergent. And then you close the door and then you turn the cycle on and you run the cycle. So this cleanse is designed and formulated to work simultaneous and in harmony with your body's normal cleansing cycle. Because the body does do that normally. But it becomes just like, you know, the little kids go out and play in the mud and get grass stains and mud stains and food stains in their clothes. And so just running them in regular water is not going to get the deep-seated stains out. And so
you need a little extra help.
Exactly. So in a similar sense, this Glenn's Cleanse is like an herbal detergent that does something along that line, that it helps the body to more efficiently remove the toxins and the residues, poisons, and a lot of the environmental pollutants that our bodies have been so chronically and deeply exposed to, and it helps to make sure that the body is cleansed properly. So that includes all the organs and tissues of the body. We also have a diabetic formula, which is the kind of thing that's really appropriate for this conversation we're having on polycystic ovarian
syndrome.
Because of what it does. Yeah.
No, I was going to say, unfortunately, we only have 5 minutes, so I would love to hear more about all of your products. But can you just list them? Can you just name them and just give an overview of what they do?
Well, just briefly, there is, as I mentioned, a diabetes formula.
Mm-hmm.
It's a diabetes support formula, so it supports the pancreas by nourishing it, helps to make sure that the insulin sensitivity is at its maximum, and it just helps to also support the digestive process for glucose being released into the bloodstream from the digestive system.
Mm-hmm.
There's a hair, skin, and nails formula that goes back to the issue that you raised about brittle hair. And particularly because of the herbs in it have the kind of minerals that speak to the very issues that we addressed earlier. There is a cold, flu, and sinus formula that's very, very good and effective in what it does to address just those very conditions of cold, flu, and sinus problems. And then there's a men's herbal support formula that has a very, very great formulation of herbs that address the kinds of issues that work with urinary tract function, sexual potency, prostate health for men. So right now, those are the five formulas that are available.
Okay, and it seems to tackle a lot of things that most people, you know, a lot of people are going through. So, yeah. And can you briefly tell us about your book? I know you have a book, Witch Doctor.
Yeah, and as you know, I thank you for clarifying the spelling of the witch is W-H-I-C-H, and then it's Doc Witch Doctor, ? And just as we talked in this program today, this book contains the kind of basic information that helps to identify for people those, the kind of clarification that is necessary for those issues and conditions and illnesses and aspects of health and wellness and sickness that will enable and empower the reader with the ability to understand that you are able to know which doctor is important, what you need to know to be healthy. So you need to know whether it's time, based on what you're experiencing, to drink more water and to add fiber to your food because you're constipated, or it's time to really understand that there's something more sinister at work here. Now I need to go and get a colonoscopy, or I have a colorectal exam, or I need to have, you know. So this is the result of seeing for years so many people making bad choices or no choices about their health only because they just didn't know. So this helps to address that sort of thing.
Okay, that's great. So is there any way that people can contact you?
Absolutely. You know, I would certainly encourage people to go to, you know, to the website, which is glennellis.com. And Glenn is spelled with two N's. That's glennellis.com, and that's the website. If they have any questions or concerns that I might be able to, you know, share some insight to, they can send me an email at info@glennellis.com.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Glenn. I have learned quite a bit, and I'm sure my listeners have as well, and I would love to have you back on the show.
Well, I just want to leave you by saying that I, once again, I have great admiration for you really feeling the importance to take the tackle and take on the role of leading the educational and awareness-raising challenges associated with this condition, and I am a lieutenant in your army. So anytime
you
dispatch me and I can be of help, do not hesitate.
Yes, you can go to the website, www.pcoschallenge.com. That's www.pcoschallenge.com, and you can set up a profile. And, you know, I may have some questions, or some of my other people may have some questions for you, because, you know, you actually hold a lot of the knowledge that people are looking for.
I will do that as soon as we finish this conversation and set a profile up, so I'll be ready, willing, and able.
Thank you very much, Glenn, and I look forward to speaking with you again
soon.
What
a pleasure. Thank you again. I appreciate you considering me to be here. To be a
part. Oh, no problem. Thank you.
Okay, Sasha.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to the PCOS Challenge Radio Show. Tune in regularly to get insights from leading experts and the support you need. Also, be sure to join our social network at PCOSChallenge.com and sign up for our newsletter. This is Sasha Ati. Help spread the word and take the PCOS Challenge.